as lips that are burning, a heart that is bad, a fragment of earthenware, silvery clad. The one who is hating is lying of lips. His own inward parts with deceit he equips. Proverbs 26, verses 23 and 24. That is our daily scripture for today, little children. From the Word Green version of 2004. And if we noted yesterday, what was translated from verse 22 differed from the sacred word in some senses. Where the American Standard Version says the words of a whisperer are as dainty morsels and they go down into the innermost parts, which is closer to the literal translation, the Word Green Version says the wounds of a liar as words or as treats will burn from the belly, its innermost meats. So somewhat of a different translation that then correlates with lips that are burning in verse 23. Yesterday we reviewed chapter 3, which of Trojan War, that is, the article. And this chapter 3 used the Manethan lists from, for example, one source of those lists is the book by David Ross Fotheringham from 1906 called The Chronology of the Old Testament, page 122. Is about the time period of the 18th dynasty of Egypt. And on that list, we saw yesterday, maybe I can just enlarge it slightly. There we go. There's not much room for enlarging this particular document in this browser. Now, dynasty, and I think there's a limitation built into all files with regard to how much you can enlarge them in your browser. But on this list of Manetho, you notice the name Hebron, number two on the list. Well, you can correlate that to the Egyptian king, Thutmose II, whose throne name was, I'm trying to remember, I just looked it up, but my memory is not retaining that information. His throne name was Akeperenri, right. Akeperenri. So you see that the Keperenri is the Kebron. Kebron, Keperenri. So the throne name of Thutmose II. So that looks like he is the one identified as Hebron. And he's not in the correct order on the list of Manetho because he succeeded the king called Misophrus on that list, who was Thutmose I. Thutmose II was the son of Thutmose I. But the other king that we talked about yesterday was Horemheb. And you see this Horemheb has the prenomen Jezer Kepruri Setepenri. And the Kepruri, that's where we can get the Keres with two R's, because Kepruri has two R's in the last part of it. Kepruri Keres. If we just ignored the P, we'd have Keres right there. And that was from the Manethan list that I would like to go back and show you. But before we go back, that's Kepruri. Just remember that. And also we have Kepertawi as his Golden Horus name. So the Keper occurs twice. And then we also have in his royal titulary names. And he's also got this name in his Golden Horus name, Heru Hermat, So that's like Keres too. Twice, care, or hair. So it looks like Keres could easily be seen insofar as or with regard to his Greek name, or the name given to him, but according to the Greek language translation of it. We have it here on Manetho's list again. If we look at number 13 in the column of Eusebius, which is the rightmost column, Eusebius, number 13 for dynasty 18 is Keres. So he's the one we identify as Horemheb. And the thing is, we know from the work of Van Dyck in the tomb of Horemheb, where he found the wine dockets from different year numbers of Horemheb, that the highest year number for Horemheb is 14. So this 15 would correspond pretty well. But not only that, but look at Akeres, number 13 on the list of Julius Africanus on the leftmost column. Akeres, he's given 12 years, and so is Kebres. That would be the Kepruri. Kebres is perfect for Kepruri, and he's given 12, and so is Akeres. 12 and 13 on that list. Both have 12 years. So they're both the same king, evidently. They're both Horemheb. And we know that's likely to be correct, because Rathos, with 6 years, is very likely Tutankhamun. We can't justify the names of all of these. I haven't tried to justify the name Rathos or Rathotis yet. But I just did this work yesterday on the name of Horemheb. So I now believe firmly that this, and also on the list of Josephus, the 12 years of Akenkeres corresponds to Horemheb again. Kepruri, Akenkeres is a little bit different, but I think we could have even checked. We should check the Akenkeres part. I think that's, isn't that consistent with what we just saw? I'm trying to find out. I just have a memory of one of Horemheb's titulary names being like Akenkeres, but it's not. Not particularly, but the Keres part, Akenkeres, the Keres part is like the Kepruri and Kepertawi, right? The two occurrences of that Keres sort of name in his names, and also Horemheb. Even the name Horemheb could be the horror part. Hore is like Kere or Kore. Kore, Kere, if the vowels aren't that significant, then Horemheb himself, his primary name before he became king, Horemheb, is like Keres also. So just the H and the R, very similar to the H and the R of Keres. So we have Horemheb, it looks like, identified now for the first time on this list of Manetho. I mean, I've never really attempted to do it before, because I was busy with other things, and also because I probably didn't have faith that I could identify it. But I didn't know the chronology well enough to really believe that I knew the 12 years of Horemheb was about right. Look at this. According to Josephus, 12 years and 5 months, that's a year 13. So, yeah, we've given, in fact, assigned him. And I looked up the year number of Ramesses I. His highest attested year is year 2. So we have 2 years for him, 13 years for Horemheb based on this. Akenkeres, 12 years, 5 months. So we have 13 plus 2 is 15, which adds up perfectly with the 15 for Keres on the list of Josephus on the rightmost column here, number 13. So 12 and 13 on the list of Josephus are also the same person. So and they're both Horemheb. So there's a lot of redundancy here. And then we have the overlap, you know, the 13 years of Horemheb plus the 2 years of Ramesses I make 15. So, therefore, it's also possible that, they co-ruled, and that, there's 10 years for Horemheb by himself, followed by 5 years, which was from the beginning of the co-rule of Ramesses I to the end of his rule, which is 5 years. So 10 and 5 is also 15. So we can completely and beautifully, easily, I mean, it's rare that anyone has done this in the lists of Manetho, that they've accounted for it the way that we have. But we can beautifully account for the names and the numbers of years with regard to Horemheb and Ramesses I on the list of Manetho in Dynasty 18. So we've done a lot of work in this article, haven't we? I mean, we've covered a lot of material. And we're in chapter 12 now, verse or paragraph 4. And this is a long paragraph, so we've got 20 minutes or so to cover this. But, oh, that's right. There was an amazing chapter, chapter 4. Let's go back and take a look at chapter 4. What was it? The Ugarit solar eclipse record finds realization in Egyptian 19th dynasty late years. Chapter 4. So, it was really a beautiful chapter. This was one of the chapters that excited me the most. I don't take, the thing is about the genealogy, I don't take any pride in any of my work. I've never felt that because, firstly, it was always done under such immense stress or duration. I mean, duress, excuse me. Under such duress, or I was always feeling like I needed to make discoveries every day while I was researching the genealogy. I needed to find out more every day that was validating and not refuting the genealogy, because if I didn't, it would just collapse. It would just have given way to my doubts and to the other propaganda that many other religions and scholars, whether they're religious or not, were, well, I called it propaganda, so I can't really say propagate because it's sort of redundant, but they were promulgating all this propaganda, you know, about the chronology. They still are, of course, in many cases. So it would have been impossible to maintain my belief unless I kept on discovering new things. And this chapter 4 was one of the most amazing discoveries regarding the eclipse of Ugarit. And when I stumbled onto this article here, I wasn't even looking for it. What did I say at the beginning I was looking for? Oh, that's right. I noticed the low radiocarbon results from the city of Dor. Now, since then, we've been able to account for that based on the fact that the Iron Age, for example, in the Iron Age, which is right around the time, the beginning of the Iron Age that we're talking about here with this eclipse, around 1200 is the beginning of the Iron Age conventionally. And people have sought to make that lower. And in some cases, they've sought to raise it also, seems to me. So there's debate about it among scholars in the scholarly circles. But, I mean, that's the other thing. Scholars will never openly admit that there are debates in many cases. Instead, they tend to, at least certain institutions like encyclopedias and so on, they'll seek to just present one chronology, one viewpoint, without making note of all the debates that are going on with regard to chronology. But 1200 is still very close to being good enough as the beginning of the Iron Age, the end of Bronze Age, in other words. So, but with regard to the radiocarbon measurements at Dor, we were finding the Iron Age 1 to Iron Age 2 transition was lower at Dor than it was at other cities, and we accounted for it one way by saying that, well, there wasn't as much pottery of certain types at Dor as there was at, for example, Tel Rio, which gave a much 50-year or 60-year higher chronology for that transition, iron 1 to 2. But, so I came across these low radiocarbon, very low, I said here, radiocarbon results from the city of Dor. Okay, so I was researching that particular thing at the time, right? But then I came across an article about radiocarbon measurements near the city, the modern day city that's called Teltwiney, which is not really very far. Let me think now. Where is it, Teltwiney, or what's the ancient name for it? I'm fumbling to find that name in my mind now. The ancient name. There's a lot of things that need to be studied, right? But this is not. I mean, I'm trying to think also, where is Ugarit compared to this city of Teltwiney? I don't think Ugarit's not very far away. They're all along the coast, the northern part of the coast, at the easternmost end of the Mediterranean. So, I mean, all the cities that we're talking about with regard to this event that happened, that we think was an eclipse near Ugarit, right? And that was, in that eclipse, when we looked at it, it actually occurred north, just north of the northeastern tip of the Mediterranean. That's where it was centered. So it would have been visible only in that range, only in a very narrow path, you know, a width of a path. The eclipse proceeded I think the eclipse path went from the bottom left to the upper right, or whatever. It was diagonal. We've got that path shown somewhere. Did I even show it in the article? Probably I did. Or did I? Maybe I didn't give an image of the eclipse, show the actual path. I didn't show it. But it was, yeah, it's very close to Ugarit. Close enough to Ugarit that it was observed by somebody, and then there was a record made of it, and that record was deposited in the city of Ugarit in the library there. So in the royal palace, I guess, in the library, that's where it was found after the destruction many centuries later. They found the burnt city. The layer that was burnt would be the destruction of Ugarit around the time of the Sea Peoples, who invaded the whole eastern coast of the Mediterranean and went down eventually, very shortly thereafter, in fact, we believe, and invaded Egypt during the time of Ramesses III in his year 8, which was 1216 BCE. So around about 1223, this eclipse occurred. Well, exactly in 1223, the eclipse occurred. But around about that time, the Sea Peoples were invading. So the fact that that eclipse occurred was deposited in the library, and then the Sea Peoples invaded shortly thereafter, because there's only 7 years between that date and the year 8 of Ramesses in our chronology, Ramesses III, which is also the beginning of Iron Age. So that explains the transition into the Iron Age was, you know, as being related to this destruction by the Sea Peoples that wiped out cities, and therefore the new pottery that came in after became the New Age pottery, which was the Iron Age instead of the Bronze Age. So, and we had remarkable remarkable discovery. The discoveries that we made here in this chapter, though, were really important, because I stumbled on this article. Not only, I stumbled on two articles, actually. I didn't stumble on the second one so much, but the one by Mr. Kanievsky I sort of stumbled onto that. I definitely stumbled on that one, onto it, stumbled onto it in a good way, and found out that that they could date the time of this, the collapse of the Bronze Age, it was called, using the research that they did with regard to, well, I can't even go into it right now, but all the research, he didn't use, I don't even think he used radiocarbon, did he? I can't remember now if he was using radiocarbon, but let me think now. Yeah, I think he probably used, he used radiocarbon as well as other studies of this, of the riverbeds in the vicinity of that city, Teltwiny. Yeah, he did a remarkable amount of research, Mr. Konievsky. So then and that was just a huge discovery when I stumbled onto that article. It was just an accidental. Well, obviously nothing is accidental if you believe in the true God. That's the other thing. When you believe in the true God, then nothing is accidental. But I wasn't looking for that article, and I just found it. And then I also found, when I looked up the eclipse, the first article I found was this article written by de Jong and van Zolt, which was the best article ever written on the subject of the Ugarit eclipse, I believe, by far, because they were doing it from a non-political standpoint. They were not seeking to establish who was ruling at the time or any of that with regard to the eclipse. They didn't have any interest in the politics. They were only interested in the slowing of the Earth's rotation over time, which is reflected in the date and time of the eclipses, right? So they could actually determine, you know, if you're 2 or 3 hours one way or the other, that helps you establish exactly how quickly the Earth's rotation has been slowing over the centuries. It's a very gradual slowing down of the Earth's rotation. So their work was absolutely just magnificent work compared to the other people's work. And they also discovered several discrepancies that other people had overlooked, you know, and just several errors that have been made by others with regard to that eclipse, in particular with regard to the month names in the language in which the records were written. So yeah, they eliminated all the doubt about that eclipse, and we now had the eclipse of Ugarit in 1223, which was absolutely incredible and magnificent. So now, when we're reading this chapter here, chapter 12.4, we've used up most of our time. But yeah, here we have this, a solar eclipse at Ugarit in 1223. The Ugarit solar eclipse, called the USE, as an acronym, USE. And the KTU 1.78 was the record, called the Ugarit solar eclipse record. And it favored 1223 for many reasons. 1223 BCE was the true date we found for that eclipse. And through the proof that that eclipse offered of the quiltwork patch chronology that was identified even as early as the Crucible of Credible Creed, or C3 article, we saw how the official Beya of Egypt, or Bey, as he's called, wrote to Ugarit a few years before that city's destruction, according to RS 86.2230, with KTU 1.78 being burned in a fire around that time. So since we know that Beya was actually presiding in some official capacity in Egypt at the time, just before Ugarit's destruction, then we can see whether it lines up with the 1223 eclipse. And in fact, in our chronology, events that were otherwise difficult to sort became much more easily understood This is because the 19th dynasty and early 20th can be represented in a tighter time frame in our chronology. User eclipse has a direct connection to BG dynasty 19. Year 7 of Thuoris, in whose reign Troy was taken, to put in quotes those words, in whose reign Troy was taken, end quote. Mentioned in Manetho's dynasty 7, the year 7 of Thuoris is mentioned in Manetho's dynasty 19. Or at least, right. At least Thuoris, right. Yeah, I think it is. It must be mentioned. Maybe we can find it if we look up the Manethan version. We're running out of time right now. We'll come back to it if we have time, right? But it's somewhere mentioned that Thuoris, or Tuzrit, in other words, apparently Tuzrit, the queen, was the one in whose year 7 the city of Troy was taken. That was at least during one of the Trojan Wars. So this is only one Trojan War. There were undoubtedly many wars against Troy. Although in Homer, quote, in Homer is called Polybus, husband of Alcandra, end quote. Polybus, husband of Alcandra. That's interesting. But Thuoris is Tuzrit, a woman, so it's not true that she's the husband of Alcandra. That's a false statement. If we interpret Homer as referring to her, so she's not the same person as a man. She's a woman. But it unmistakably, okay, year 7, okay, of Thuoris, that expression, speaking about the one during whose reign Troy was taken, unmistakably refers to Tuzrit. Compare that with Thuoris. Very similar name. The wife of Sipta was Tuzrit, and she was pharaoh from 1227 after Sipta, who ruled 1234 to 1227 and died. But he ruled for 7 full years in Manetho Eusebius. Although she subsumed his reign and continued to 1226. So her year 7 would be sometime around 1227, apparently. Because she subsumed his reign and took over his year 1. So 7 years after 1234 is 1227. That's evidently her year 7. And such relative dating is exactly shown by Krauss with regard to her being that is Tuzrit being the successor of Sipta and subsuming his reign, okay? That's from Ancient Egyptian Chronology, page 415. Thus, in our chronology, she began to rule in 1227. But here's the thing. Since she ruled 7 years, including Sipta's years, her year 7 could possibly be construed as 1220. Because, you know, if you didn't know she was subsuming the reign of Sipta and thus having year 1 in 1234, 7 years after 1227 would be 1220 in the BCE years, because the years count backwards in the BCE calendar. So this is the exact average date for the fall of Troy, actually, as taken from the 9 most authoritative ancient sources, Ephorus, 1135, Sosibius, 1172, Eratosthenes, 1184, Timaeus, 1193, the Parian Marble, 1209, Dystiarchus, 1212, Herodotus, 1250, Aretes, 1291, Daurus, 1334. The average of those numbers is 1220. Since 1220 BCE falls during year 4 of Ramesses III, his year 1, 1223, count back 3 years to 1220, and you get, that's year 4, It is during the time of the Sea People's invasions, because it's, okay, it's year four, but it's during the time of the Sea People's invasions, approximately anyway, only 3 years after the Ugarit solar eclipse of March 5th, 1223. The fall of Ugarit is believed to have occurred in the period 1223 to 1216, which nearly coincides. Yeah, it's almost identical with the 1220 date of Troy's fall there. That's the average date that we got. But it can only be seen as year 7 of Tuzerit if you don't understand when Tuzerit actually began to rule. It would have been her year 7 had she ruled for 7 years after 1227. That's true. Very true. But the thing is, the amazing agreement, phenomenal agreement between the range of 1223 to 1216 and 1220, which is almost exactly in the middle of that range, is impressive because they were derived almost independently and both at the time of the Sea Peoples did they occur. Both of them occurred at that time of the Sea Peoples, which we who we believe invaded in year 8 of Ramesses III, according to the records of that pharaoh. So that would be 1216, year 8, with year 1, 1223. 1220 is 30 years after Merneptah year 1, also 30 years before the Trojan War. And the Trojan War has a 30-year pharaonic legend. That is, prior to the war, a pharaoh ruled 30 years, and also a post-war pharaonic legend after the war. The same king ruled many years, both of which fit well in the BG. The Sea Peoples can thus, quote, explain it all, unquote, in 1220 BCE. So that was a phenomenal and really most exciting, perhaps, chapter of this whole article. But they were all amazing, and I shouldn't say that because chapter 5 is even more exciting, I think. Really, really was exciting for the absolute chronology that it gave, that just was reinforced by this chapter 4 with the Ugarit solar eclipse. It was scintillatingly brilliant, and without any credit due to myself, but merely because of the way in which the circumstances conspired to allow these things to fall into a place where they could be discovered and to be extant in such a way as to prove the chronology so convincingly. So August 23rd is today's date in the year of the Common Era, 2024. The time is 22:51 hours Eastern Daylight Time in North America. I'm Ward Green. I love you very much, and thank you for listening and watching. And in my behalf, this is Liv Dusty, and this is Cassie. They're saying, bye for now. That was Trojan War, the article, Chapter 12, Paragraph 4.